Hi, I'm Little Jimmy Hursa.
Okay.
Cast adrift on Earth briefly.
Down here for a visit?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm visiting everywhere.
How'd you start with writing and reading and the rest of it? Were you a kid that picked up every book?
I was 14, but when I started writing, but my family were obsessive readers. My dad was a county ag agent, you know what they are?
Yeah, yeah.
Extension. All winter long we'd go to the library Saturday morning, you know. So they were right on top of a family joke was at dinner, they're talking about Norman Mailer's Naked in the Dead, and I asked if it was illustrated. But so I started writing poems because I read Keats.
So you started with poetry?
Yeah. One hope of finding the soul language, you know. But fiction at about the same time, because one good later in New York when I was 19, I wondered if a hick could be a writer, but then I realized I used to ride around with my dad day after day visiting farmers, so I felt like I had a lot of material from that life. You know,
sort of like John Steinbeck and his...
More of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Steinbeck, in fact, was a family favorite. And when you speak rudely of Steinbeck, I would say they didn't even write The Grapes of Goofy.
Did your family have a lot of books around?
Yeah. Loaded down with books.
Do you remember any particular book that really sparked your imagination?
You know, some of it was, I had a brilliant high school English teacher, and I was her doll because I would read everything. And she started me early on Willa Cather, which is a good place to start.
Yeah.
And then Steinbeck, and then, of course, Hemingway. But my great discovery for me was Faulkner.
Is that right?
Yeah, I never really cared much for Hemingway because he was from where we already were.
Right.
You know, that was...
Right.
And so he was a tourist from Chicago. You know.
Your style is so distinctive and certainly not Faulknerian. At least in my opinion. I mean, it's just, you have a unique voice in your writing.
Well, I don't know where the voice ever comes from, you know. Because every book to me is quite different, but maybe not stylistic, but, you know.
Yeah.
Because so much of my material comes from generalized wandering around the United States, travel, walking. I never get an idea while sitting still, you know.
Yeah.
It's all pondering in general.
Do you keep notes as you walk?
No, not as I walk, but I keep a journal generally.
Uh-huh.
Although they're not always a good thing.
Yeah.
You can use up your material by being a journal maniac like Anais Nin.
Yeah.
You know, where you end up with 25 big volumes.
Or Albert Camus. He had a room full of journals.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're both...
I have a funny Camus story because I worked with Jeanne Moreau for a while. And her last boyfriend... She was Camus' lover when
yeah.
he died.
Yeah.
And she told me the best meal they ever had together were woodcock. because they call them France. So I brought some to New York and cooked them for, you know. That's the other good thing about the English teacher and at this little rural agricultural high school I went to. She was a Francophile too, so I read a great deal of French literature.
Yeah.
So they're all somewhat pleased in France.
Ah.
When I whip them out.
Yeah. Do you speak French?
No, very poorly.
Yeah.
Just enough to get by.
Yeah.
I had an ugly experience this morning about not knowing Spanish. I was coming, my studio's up the hill, up Solero at an old ranch. I rent a house for about $100 a month, mostly because they don't want anybody else there.
Yeah.
So I rent in this old ranch house, where there's even a jaguar skin on the wall that Grandpa shot off a calf.
Wow.
Yeah. But anyway, on the way home today, there's a short, fat Mexican girl weeping on the road, so I picked her up. And she'd been in the mountains for 2 days with no food, no nothing.
Uh-oh.
So I took her to town. The Charlie's, who speaks fluent Spanish like many people in Patagonia, what the coyote, she had saved her money for years and paid the coyote to take her to Los Angeles. And of course, he abandoned her down by Lake Patagonia.
Yeah.
You know, like they do. So I had no idea what to do with her.
Yeah.
She just wanted to go home. So Charlie said, I'll get her a ride to Nogales so she could recross. You know, she'd obviously had such a miserable time. And I said, get a couple burritos in her. Says, I will. It's really a tough world, isn't it?
Some people,
a young couple walking up the creek one day, and they wanted to know, how do we get to Chicago?
Oh, God.
You know, what do you say? Right. Very touching. Because, you know, Chicago, of course, has an enormous Mexican population.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just have all these quarrels with people. Because how do you see these people as a menace? You know, what's the threat here?
Do you remember your first actual publication you ever did? Girls, not here, please.
It was a poem in Poetry and a poem in Nation magazine.
In Nation? Wow.
Yeah. They published poetry. Published poetry first. I never even showed anything to anybody, so what happened is I met Denise Levertov, and then she said, send me your poems. So I sent them, her about a dozen, and I got a big thick envelope. I thought she was sending the poems back, but she said, I'm the new poetry editor at W.W. Norton Publishing Company. If you got any more, I'm sure I can do a book of yours. So that's what happened.
What, that's mid-60s then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Earlier, yeah.
I
think my first book of poems came out in 65.
Your first prose work, your first novellas.
Well, I was writing prose at the same time.
Yeah.
Like I always do. You know, like the week I finished a novella, I also wrote three poems. So they all go together because it comes from the same source, you know. I'm not sure quite how that works. Yeah, it does. You're either preternaturally alive to language or you're not. And you go into long, dull periods when you're not, you know. But when you're hot, so you write anything.
And then do you go through spells where you don't?
Yeah, of course. I tell people who don't quite believe it that I wrote Legends of the Fall in 9 days.
Really?
Yeah, and only changed one word. Now I forget what the word was. I don't know. I'm old now, but I've written, 35 books?
Yeah.
Absurd.
I love the fact that in any description of you, they always start off with prolific.
Yeah. Not quite true. I just don't know what else to do. I'm going to say, why are you so prolific? And I write back and say, because I don't own a big ranch. You know? I don't have 35 horses.
What's your preferred way of writing? Do you?
I just write with big pens and on yellow law tablets. Now, Joyce, my secretary, has worked for me 35 years now almost. So then I just fax her my work. She types it and sends it. I always wrote longhand.
Uh-huh.
I have no idea how to work a computer.
Uh-huh.
But they're fabulous in that you can revise indefinitely and not have to retype it, which used to be a nightmare.
Do you do much revision?
No, I'm not a big reviser. I'm very careful because when I typed my first two novels on an old Remington, I did them one finger.
Yep.
So if you're that slow, you're very careful about what you write down in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, most of my writing time is thinking, you know, what's next?
Yeah.
That kind of thing. So by the time I actually put it on paper, I really thought it through.
Now, I know that you get people all the time who want to be great writers, who want to be writers, and they come to you for advice and stuff, I'm sure, all the time. And does it get irritating, or do you?
Yeah, I keep them away as much as possible.
Yeah.
Just because I say I can't help you, and I don't have any time unless you're going to give your entire life to it. This can't be just I'm thinking about being a writer, because I don't care about you in that case.
Yeah.
Just if you're obsessed or you feel called, you have to give your entire life to it. Not withholding anything, and that generally dampens their enthusiasm.
You're sitting here, you know what's going on with Facebook and computers and email and Twitter and all this stuff. And everybody is now suddenly a writer. Not a good writer, not a bad, just a... What do you think?
I don't think anything about it because I don't really understand it. I do know that you get a full royalty out of these books they sell. That would be my concern if they're trying to rip you off. But that whole e-book thing, or I don't care.
Yeah.
I can't see that it makes ultimately any difference, you know. I mean, my last novel sold more than any of my other novels for no reason I can think of. You know, although over the years, some of them, like Dalba, or earlier Dalba, has sold well now for 20 years.
Yeah.
People just keep reading it. I think it's just wild freedom. Once you get started, nobody's trying to stop you. Nobody gives a shit. So you just plunge on, and there's a grudging respect for anybody that can make their living in it. No.
For some bizarre reason, maybe because you write novellas and not novels, you've managed to answer all the basic questions faster than anybody else with real...
Yeah, substance. I write both. It's I just know. That after doing one, I try to do something different just so I don't suffocate.
Have you ever tried to do something totally different?
I can't write short stories for some reason. I've tried, and I wrote one a couple of years ago and published it immediately in the New Yorker, and I said, here's something new, and then never got another one. It's not a bad life.
No.
No, I never read when people say, try to tell me what they've given up to be writers. That's all bullshit. They've given up usually a high income, but that seems flimsy. Because the people I know, many with real high incomes, don't seem particularly happy about it. I don't know, except your perspective changes with age. You used to think you didn't care, but once you get older, you really don't care. You just do your work, send it off, and they print it.
Yeah.
And I don't do book tours anymore because they became too exhausting. So they ruined my health with one. I did 23 cities in 29 days.
Ooh.
That kind of thing. I do them in Paris. I've done as much as 30 interviews in a week, which is nauseating.
Yeah.
And it occurred to me I may as well be in a basement in Brooklyn. Yeah. But I like what Miles Davis said. It's all of my music. What can I have to add to it? Yeah. But I don't know if you look at the American novel now. I don't think Linda's in overwhelming shape at the present, you know. I mean, the names don't race through my head.
Yeah.
You know, but it's episodic, I kind of think there's times of a replenishment and everything's happening. But then I don't necessarily like the latest European stuff either, because I don't get any particular joy out of reading Bolano, because he's always writing about writers, and I don't like to read about writers, you know. I don't care about writers.
Jim, I want to really thank you, and this has been a great honor for us, that you agree to meet with such losers breezing through the town.
I don't mind. A lot of it is always if someone who seems interesting enough, which you did to me, so why not do it? You know, you can't think of a reason not to.
Anyway, how many people do you know who've gone out to write the Great American Paragraph?
Yeah, well, that's part of it. I think that's why I quit doing book tours. There are too many sort of aimless interviews, almost on the level of what's your favorite color.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing. I wanted to minimize it. That's the problem. That's why I went to the law tablets and pens. You know, I didn't want to be interfered with. People keep saying, my computer is down. Well, that wouldn't work for me at all. Because there's never an excuse not to do your work that I know of.
Yeah.
I never run into one. Yeah. A when people say, I've written an enormously long novel, I always say, make it shorter. How much of people's time can you demand?
Yeah.
You know, one of my inspirations for the novella was Thomas Nobbs, Tonya Krieger, and those short novels that he wrote, Captain Ann Porter's or two. And the guy, a German named Hoffman, saw by some a short novel short all over, like they say. And you only have so much, and I don't like needless expansiveness. I like dense works, you know. I don't know, because I have. It seems to me that the proliferation of MFA programs are sort of Ponzi schemes, is flooding the market with inferior material. All the great literature of the Western world and the Eastern world, I've learned in Chinese poetry too, which has meant so much to me. So, why do you want to read each other at these schools when you haven't read the great works of the West? The other one I always think is when they write you from Sweden and say, what is FedEx or something like that, there's the law and stuff like that.
That's FedEx.
And over the years, I've had about 9 bestsellers in France, but never here. Although this last book was real close. And that's not my problem, that's the publisher's problem.
Yeah.
You know.
9 bestsellers in France, huh?
Yeah.
Let me stretch over here and the good stuff. Thank you, good sir. To life.
Yeah, why not?
But
wherever you go, country people are very similar.
Yeah.
I saw this little film about Italians. This old man each morning walks his cows up the mountain 5 miles. In the late afternoon, he goes and gets them. So he's doing about 20 miles a day walking. But they say all he eats is soup, but you see the soups that he eats, the spoon stands up in them, you know.
Yeah.
But those people are the same everywhere.
Oh.
It's just like I notice rural people in the north and south of America are essentially similar. They have the same kind of patois. And aren't really quite pleasant. And the hate always comes out of people who have been denuded by life, you know, sort of James Earl Ray kind of people.
Thanks very much.